Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
Hey folks, have you ever heard that communications are the key to success in your organization? Well, tonight we're going to talk about fire department communications and maybe a few ways that you can improve them for your organization. That, a little catch up on how things are going here in the Great White North, all coming up right after this on Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? We're Ruby Summer for RAD. Music is one of the most important things in our life.
But nothing is more important than life itself.
Good morning, world. It's nice to wake up to another...
So when you know your friend should not get behind the wheel, drive them home or call them a cab and give them a RAD My Safe Ride home card.
I wanna live my life.
Music lives and so should you.
Brought to you by RAD, My Safe Ride Home, and Shawnee Records.
Friends don't let friends drive drunk. Do you?
Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, September 10th, 2021. I'm Jeff.
Craig.
And Chris.
Hey, welcome, Chris. Like, officially to, like, maybe more permanent structure
we'll
on the show.
We'll talk about that at another time, but I'm available sometimes.
That's nice. So, welcome to another pre-recorded edition of the show. Weather's beautiful out here where we're at. We're enjoying the tail end of summer, and so is a cricket here that's joined us in the high-tech Tailboard Talk studios. He's been chiping away, but doesn't seem to be adding anything to the conversation. We're going to be talking about communications later on in the show, both effective and ineffective communications, as the case may be. But I guess we have something else to communicate, too. So Dane Carley has been with us with the show Tailboard Talk with Tailboard Consulting, and it was really at the front end of this whole enterprise. I even came in later than this, but he's got a lot of things going on in his life and with family and work and stuff like that, and so he has decided to take a short pause and step away from the show at this point in time, not to say that he'll never be back or never be a guest host or anything like that, but right now he's focusing a lot of his attention in other areas, and we'd like to just take a little break and focus on those things. So we found Chris sitting on the corner here. He was holding the sign.
Did you say out on the corner?
Anything for a buck. Anything for a buck.
Yeah.
That guy looks like fun.
You've been here and done the show a few different times with us, and we've all known each other about as long, to be honest with you. So it's nice to have you here joining in the conversation, because alone, Craig and I don't know what to really say to each other, because we're all nervous and stiff and stuff. Or we just sit and argue with each other back and forth, and the show doesn't go anywhere. So it's nice to have a referee and a conversation starter in the group. So really appreciate you being here.
That I can do. I can referee, that's for sure.
Huh. Nice. So we're kind of late summer here, early fall, whatever you want to call that time of year. Still a lot of, obviously, wildfires going on. The weather's been very hot and dry most of the summer up in our area here. We just got some recent rains in the last 2 weeks that really have helped us a lot in our area. But there's still fires out in California, fires in northern Minnesota, et cetera. a lot of stuff going on. So hopefully we get a little bit more rain here as we transition into fall and the weather gets cooler before the snow falls.
Yeah, we've got a couple friends that are still doing DNR work here in Minnesota. There's a lot of people from out of state that are here. That's really unusual for us. We tend to be more of a net exporter in firefighting resources than an importer. But this year has been decidedly different. We've had a couple weeks of just breaking the weather to keep the smoke away, but we've had wildfire smoke at times, something awful here in the Fargo-Moorhead area, from up in Canada, from out in California, and from northern Minnesota at times, depending on which direction the wind blows.
It's kind of interesting because it's you have to actually, what fires is this smoke coming from?
And I've
never experienced that in my life before. We've had some haze that was usually higher up in the atmosphere from fires out west, but never where it actually is coming down to ground level.
Yeah.
And then you have to, day to day, week to week, are these the Canadian fires, the northern Minnesota fires, the western fires? Because it's been a variety of all of them. I remember the one day, 2 weeks ago, I was driving home from work, and I actually thought there was a wildland fire in Glendon, in the town nearby mm-hmm. where I live, going, my gosh, because usually, being a wildland fire or smoke chaser, you look at that smoke and it doesn't look like it's that far off, but you go, wow, it's when you actually get there, it was a lot longer distance. But driving home, I'm going, no, that actually looks like that's right in town. That's pretty close. And that's all it was
yeah.
smoke and haze from the Minnesota and Canadian fires.
Yes, you know, we're used to every now and then you'll get something like that from Canada coming down, and it tends to be more of a haze, more of a smog that you get in the area, but that actually still had the smoke texture in the air. And you can smell a difference in air quality between smoke that's coming from a long distance usually and what we had this year when they came through from the Minnesota side. Because, I was at work it was about a two-day period of time when it was the worst, and it smelled like somebody was having a campfire two houses up the road in town from you is what it smelled like. And I've never smelled such aromatic smoke. You know, that felt so alive and so close. It's coming from 250 miles away.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's what surprises me, is the distance. You know, as structural firefighters, we're not used to the wildland game, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. but 200 some miles all the way from California. And they're talking that it was stretching all the way to New York, you know, on some occasions. And we went a couple weeks without seeing the sun, it seemed like. You know, it seemed like it was just a mm-hmm. hazy fog. And then people with medical conditions were starting to, complain and have difficulties with breathing problems, stuff like that. So,
and some people without medical conditions, or maybe they have light medical conditions they're not aware of that were getting triggered
right.
by longer-term exposure to that.
And hundreds of miles. I mean, that just baffles me to think that, you know, we see house fires all the time. They go up in the air. They just dissipate, kind of gone.
Yeah.
In a short time, you know. Fires in town don't reach my house 10 miles away, you know. But now we're dealing with fires all the way from California, all the way from Canada. It's crazy. I don't envy those guys. That's a job that I was not built for.
Now, those are some long, hot days, dangerous days.
You know, sometimes we chuckle when police officers say, I wouldn't want your job. Right? I don't know how you guys run into a building like that and do what you do, and we're thinking, well, that's not a big deal. We read the outside of the building. We judge the structural stability.
Could step out.
I was thinking we think the same thing about you. You wear that vest and hope that the bullet hits the vest if you do get shot.
And we do. I think the same thing about police officers. My temperament, my personality would not be suitable for that. Also, long term, my outlook on humanity and other human beings would not survive. You know, when you're dealing with such problematic behavior over and over again. But also, as much as cops don't understand how they could possibly work as structural firefighters, I don't understand as a structural firefighter how you can do the job of a wildland firefighter. And I mean that in all sincerity. I can't imagine doing the work that they do under the conditions that they do for as long as they do. And with the unknowns that we have, and maybe the unknowns that are me are laughable to wildland firefighters. It's mostly, you know, where things are going, and you've got predictions that are going out multiple days about flow patterns and stuff, but In fact, there were times I didn't want to be outside more than 20 minutes. I made judgments about what activities I was going to do outside based on the amount of time and the volume of smoke that was going on here. No, I'm not doing that. I'll save that for another day or another week, because I'm not going to go out for that event for a half an hour if the smoke's going to be like that. I'm going home. This is dumb.
It's an interesting conversation about wildland and structural. I have a cousin that's a wildland firefighter out west, and we meet up every 5 years probably, and we talk about the jobs. And he can't believe that I'm a structural firefighter. Who would go into a burning house? And I can't believe he's a wildland fire. I'm not going out in acres of fire. That's crazy. I always say to him that, I can hopefully step out of the building. Mm-hmm. That's my key to the whole thing. I'm not built for running 6 miles through the woods to...
Yeah, how are you going to step out of the woods?
Right. So those guys, I give them a lot of credit and a lot of props to what they do for a living. And they're certainly underpaid and work hard. So kudos to those guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've been noticing something lately.
Craig's never involved?
Well, yeah. No, he's about as actively involved now as he normally is. I don't know if you heard his phone going off there before, but he's taking care of some important business off to the mm-hmm. side, and luckily not disturbing us. And so, of course, who are we to bring it up?
Right. Modern nice technology.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
There we go.
Always on duty.
Yeah. I'm always envious of those guys that carry two phones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not quite sure what's going on there.
Oh, he must have
twice as good as
one.
Just hoping for the day I get three.
Oh, gee.
Then you know you've really made
like
it.
Here, why don't you take mine for a while?
I got a phone for you can handle, too.
Think about that every once in a while. What was it like before we had cell phones?
Oh.
Think about the assistant chiefs driving around, stopping by the stations. Nobody could call them on a cell phone.
Right.
Yeah.
Those were the days, I think.
We were even talking today about maybe younger adults that are going through stress and pressure these days.
Sure.
And are genuinely having issues with everything going on in society and stuff like that. So it's a little tongue-in-cheek. It's not meant to be totally. But, heck, can you think of back when we were younger, you would jump in your beat-up, crappy car. That was a piece of junk, so that's all you could afford. You decide you're going to go visit a buddy. And so you might drive 250 miles across the state to wherever that dude's going to college or what have you. No phone, no cell phone. You're lucky if you even had a map in the car. You just know, hey, it's over this way. You're going to see some signs off the interstate and start heading up this county road or whatever. Didn't think a thing of it. You would just, boom, venture out and nobody could call you. Nobody knew exactly where you were. You couldn't call for a tow truck if you had a problem or anything like that, or that kind of stuff. And shoot, you'd drive, if you were lucky with a road map, down, hey, I'm going to go visit a buddy in Cincinnati. I've never been to Cincinnati. So you got your collection of two or three roadmaps of the different states, mm-hmm. and out you went, from the gas station.
Take a left at the big tree, then go three houses down.
Those are interesting times. But modern technology is obviously fantastic, with all the handheld apps that we have available to us nowadays. And it might have saved my marriage. I remember driving to the... large metropolitan areas close by, and my spouse was reading the map, and that didn't always go so well. So now I have Google Maps or whatever I'm using, and she can do her thing, and I can just get her there, and everybody's happy.
Yeah. So you sit in the car, beautiful air conditioning with maybe satellite radio music going or whatever else, and you got Google Maps or Apple Maps or Waze that are actively guiding your driving directions. Where you want to go, and the wife must have got an update on her Apple Maps, whatever she's using. Because the last time we took that in the car someplace, it was beautiful because it was now giving directions. Like we were coming up to a traffic light and say, at the next traffic light, you'll take a left. Hold it. What? I'm normally used to in 300 feet, take a left.
Yeah.
On 34th Street, Raven Avenue, County Road 64 West. What? What was that? Yeah, the way the technology is getting, it's just awesome. And the amount of communications you can do with that, the amount of business you can do with that, the amount of information you can transmit back and forth is awesome. And the idea of your phone being there kind of ties into one of the subjects I wanted to talk to tonight. And that's some of the problems with communication in the fire service. And sometimes you almost wonder if, obviously, expectations are changing and have been changing over time about what gets communicated, how and when. And maybe I could take you back to the earliest days of our fire department where we had the memo board. And I actually have to bring you back to a different organization. I worked for an ambulance service down in the Twin Cities prior to starting with Moorhead Fire. And we had the memo clipboard. And this was a legal-sized clipboard that had two big-ass rings on the thing. The two-hole punch. And so old guys are getting really excited right now.
Two-hole punch? Never heard of that.
And so your memos went on the two-hole punch on this big circular ring on this clipboard that hung on the wall. And your job when you got to work was supposed to be, okay, you take that thing off the wall after you got your rig checked in, sit down at the dining room table, and you take a look at that top menu. Actually, before you take it off the wall, take a look. If you recognize that top memo, you're good. If you don't, you bring it with you over to the table, you sit down, and you keep reading company memos until you get to the last one that you knew you read. And this is how you're updated on what was going on in the big EMS company that was running rigs all over the place in the cities. Huh. Now, we don't have a memo board like that. We used to have something kind of similar in Moorhead when I started back in the early 90s. You had a place where you would collect a good share of the memos on the board in a semi-organized way. But now we're utilizing an intranet web-based service where we're posting all of our What's New updates, and we've got places to look at all of our various forms. And first of all, we're really awesome at it because we only have department forms there and on a network drive in the city and like in five or six different places on it. So you can find, so you really can't find it anything well without a search because we've got information all over the flipping place. But anyways, we've got information all over the flipping place and we're communicating what's new updates. We've got digital display boards in the station so we can have three PowerPoint type slides that display through to give you critical updates or things that are going on besides having monthly meetings with our officers and so forth. And we never seem to be able to get away from the issue that some people have that you're not communicating enough. We don't know what's going on.
So that's what I was thinking. That's the question I was just thinking of. Is the communication then any better now than it was before? So we have all this technology. We have all these different ways to communicate. We have cell phones. We have emails. We have texts. We have memos. We have the message boards in the stations, the live electronic ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it any better than it used to be 30 years ago?
You know, I think it's just we're obviously doing it a different way, maybe fancier way, I guess is a term you could use. But in communications, right, there's a receiver and a sender, and both have to be willing participants to take in the information. And if you're not willing to, or you just don't feel like it, or you don't care, unless it's something that you really care about, you're not really paying attention to what's going on out there in the department. You know, guys that I know guys that will come to work and they don't really care. They sit down, they do their job, and they're out of there. Then there's the younger guys, or maybe guys that are really ambitious that really seek more information. You know, so we have both ends of the spectrum, I think, is what we're looking at. Guys that just want to come do their job, put their 30 years in and get out of here. Some guys that want to maybe advance or just love firefighting or whatever so much that they can't get enough information. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't invite a brand new guy that's seeking all this information to the chief officer's meeting. Because some days there'd be 300 people there and some days there'd be four, including half the chief officers that want to leave. But so I think that's the biggest thing is the willingness to accept communication, be open to communication, seek communication, give communication. You know, all those things come into play, I think. And is it better than the two-hole punch, which I've never heard about?
That's yeah.
Is it better? I think it is because it's more, there's, you know, there's apps, there's boards, there's morning meetings, you know, things of that are getting out. We have, you know, go-to meetings that go throughout the whole city, all the seven stations. You know, so we're getting up-to-date information sent out there, but it's got to feed from the top to the bottom and the bottom from the top. You know, well, it's got to feed that way.
I guess that's where I kind of wonder, because I wonder if sometimes we're diluting it so much by having so many ways of communicating that it's hard for everybody to keep up with everything. It's hard to focus on one certain way. And I'm torn between what I'm saying and what I've always said, well, I'd like to
I think to really get a message across to somebody, I like to do it three different ways. So I like to send them an email, give them a call, etc. Do it face to face, and then you, if those three times, then it's going to work. But is that too much? Is it too repetitive? Is it?
Yeah, I think it can be, but I think when you need to get your point across, you need to hit it a couple different ways to make sure that they understand the message that's being sent out.
I know when you're reading textbooks about managing change, one of the points that they emphasize is that it's almost impossible to over-communicate the change that you're trying to implement, the change in the policy, the change in the structure, the change in direction of the organization. They're talking about it in smaller pieces, but if you've communicated it once to everybody, you feel that everybody's gotten the message, they know it, and they're going to remember it, which is almost never the case. And it wouldn't be if we were in the receiving positions either, that if we heard it once, we would know it. Because in our minds, as some of the people who are communicating, how many times have we been rehearsing it in our mind over and over again? So we've already been repetitive of the message inside our own heads. And so it's hard for us to forget that. But it's easy to not remember that point that, yeah, you need to hit really important messages multiple times before they're in and sink in, especially when it's goals or objectives or new initiatives that you're putting in place.
So I like, don't jump in here, but yeah, I think that sometimes what's in the message is important too. So when we made some major changes in Fargo Fire towards the active shooter type situations, so out comes a memo, here's what we're going to do in an active shooter situation. We incorporate training, here's what we're going to do. And everyone is really receptive to those situations because it's a major deal. It's a situation that we could walk into at any moment. So they got the memo. We know what we're going to do. We worked with the police department how to do, quick rescue teams. We had, training that we did those things. We worked together with PD on how we're going to enter and save victims. Those things are big things. Memo comes out about new forks at the station. It gets read once. We move on. So I think sometimes the topic is a big thing in mm-hmm. communication and how widespread it gets.
One unique thing with our bulletin boards that we are using, it's web-based, and so there are always different limitations with software that you have. So it's actually, we're using SharePoint as our point to communicate most of the things. And in the What's New bulletin board kind of area of this thing, you can put the text in there, you can add some graphics, I guess. They're mostly attachments, and they don't display like that. And so you can put a nice message in there, but if you wanted to have a picture along with it, like you might have embedded in an email, that's just there. And it doesn't work that way. And if you've got nice fancy line breaks and you're formatting the text right, then when you hit post, it tends to show up as one big string of message instead of formatted the way that you want. So there are limitations on there.
So where did you put those things? The boards?
Yeah, so, okay.
Electronic boards, right, you're saying? TV, you got a TV up on the
wall. What's interesting is, so when we talk bulletin boards, we're now realizing we're having two different definitions of them. So we got TV screens that are like display boards.
Yeah.
That are different from this SharePoint system that you can log into a computer or your phone or anywhere else just to provide what's new. But what's weird on top of this is we're these digital display boards that are in the station now. We have one in our day room. We have two stations in Moorhead. We've got one in the day room and then one on the apparatus floor. Sure. And we started off with one on the apparatus floor in each of our two stations. And the boards were put up there to give us call information and a map for routing instructions and the most basic information about the call right at the bottom of the screen. Yeah. It was just supposed to be an aid to where are we going and why. And it would pop up a street map, and it would also pop up an A-side view of the building from the street view of Google, for example.
Sure.
And so that's all that we were really looking to have the boards do to begin with. And we also kind of wanted to show the positions of where are all of our rigs in town right now, because we have two whole stations.
You never know where those two are at.
I know. So where are our two engines and potentially our two rescues if they're in service? Because we'll split our crews at times to go different directions. Where's the bat chief at? So, it's hard to... I know.
I don't like that.
We don't do that because we don't have a solution on there.
Where are both of them? But there's only one here.
We found we could rotate through different displays of information. Sure. And not to be a plug for First Arriving, that's the company that we're using right now for displaying the information on our boards. And that system has tie-ins to SharePoint so that it can automatically display certain things on some windows. So we've got an area that shows if a truck is down for repairs, what the last four or five entries were for that, and assuming we're using that system well, it could maybe keep you up to date. And then an area on training, what training is scheduled coming up next. And if you're using the training calendar well, it'll pull things out of there to see what's going on. And then an area for what's new. But it gives you about the first 3 to 4 sentences of each thing that you've posted. So it shows you like the 3 or 4 most recent posts, but it just gives you a little preview of what the story is. So we've also found that we need to adjust how we write up something and what's new to tell people what's going on. The title needs to be very focused, and your first 2 to 3 sentences need to tell the most critical piece of information that people need to know. So they see it when it scrolls by on the board, and they pick it up and they figure out what's going on. Because if the most important part is 2 paragraphs in, you're going to give a half narrative about what's going on before you get to the solution. It's going to be lost, because now that the display boards are in front of your face where you're sitting down and eating dinner, and when you're on the apparatus floor doing vehicle checks in the morning and stuff, you'll look at that briefly. And so we found that we've had to change how we're crafting our messages to make them work well. And I'm not saying we're always successful with that either. We're just starting to figure out, oh, people use this in a different way now. If this display board's here, I don't have to go to the website to read the whole post. I just now want to see the condensed version of it up here, just move on and go about my day.
So let's go old school.
Good and bad.
Let's go old school.
Yeah.
Okay, back before we had MDCs, before we had all these fancy messaging machines in the stations, how does it change what we're doing? And I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, because I'm more of an old school type of person, but I realize I'm old, so that's why I'm old school. So bear with me here. And that, yes, I need to learn to adjust and change and adapt, and that the newer, younger generations maybe are more... That's how they receive their information. But I get frustrated sometimes because our MDCs will go down and you would think the world stopped spinning. And it's like, okay, right. Well, then I pick up the piece of paper like I always used to do and I write down the address and then I go to the call. And you know what changed? Nothing. Right. I don't need the MDC. I can use it and it's a valuable tool. So don't get me wrong, I understand. We have pre-plans in them, all that. That is very important information. But we sometimes, I think, become so over-reliant on this stuff that it actually causes us more problems than it's worth. And when I go to the messaging boards in the stations, one of the most important things we do as first responders is respond quickly to fires, heart attacks, etc. So what does everybody do when that tone comes in and that message flashes up on the board? Do they run to the truck or do they stop and read it? So is it actually helping us or is it hurting us?
Right, right. I see it all the time being on shift. The guys will stop at that TV to watch.
And I know that's what I did.
And they're waiting for the call to pop up, so we're at the mercy of, you know, and I'm like, you guys can keep moving, you can keep going. Maybe the driver could stop, but everyone else stops and looks at it too.
And you're still going to hear the audio.
Yeah.
The turnout clock is running. Right. And I get, again, I bring this up because I know what I did. I looked at the TV. Oh, well, where is it?
If you're
what
using the
it?
Map.
What's going on? And then I'd walk to the vehicle. Yeah. Well, the whole time the turnout clock is running. Right. So if somebody's not breathing, if somebody's got a fire, yes, there are only a few seconds, but those seconds count. And what do I have there that I don't have in my vehicle? Oh, yeah, I have it all in my vehicle, too.
So we'll get all the stuff in round.
I'm kind of playing both sides of it here.
You know, the paper that you're talking about, there's one skill I noticed that I don't have like I used to have. And when an address came out over the radio that we were getting called to, that address got locked into my head.
Right.
And actually, it was... It was repeating in my head, subconsciously, over and over again. So it wasn't like I heard it once and it's there. In my mind, I was repeating it over and over and over again until I would get on scene. Sometimes I was aware of it, consciously aware that I'm repeating this address because when I would get locked in there, sometimes I wasn't. So like page tones could go out, and 2 minutes later, if I was at home and I'm hearing something, the wife might say, "What was that?" medical, 2717 11th Street North. And that part came out like a bleh, where the address was locked in. It's ready to get spit back out again. Anytime you need to go, where are we going again? 2317 11th Street North. because I'm repeating what I had heard audibly. I have lost most of that skill.
Well,
and it's still there if I focus on it, but it's not natural and subconscious anymore where I lock that in because there's no repeat button on my pager. There's no visual display screen. There's no MDC. I'd have to know that and at least retain it at night long enough to write it down on a piece of paper that's sitting.
That's maybe part of our problem, though, is the more I, the last 15 minutes I've been sitting here going, we should have brought in one or two firefighters, younger firefighters, because you've got three mature chief officers here.
That's mighty kind. Yeah.
And so we're looking at it again. I'm trying to look at both sides because I get both sides of it. We maybe need to do the show again and bring in some younger firefighters to give their perspective on it.
I'll hit stop on this right here.
I sit here and go, what? Are we overloading them with information? Because they've got a screen in every damn room flashing information and telling them this, telling them that. Are we diluting our own? It goes back to, I don't remember who said it, but many, many years ago I remember somebody at a conference talked about APs and SOGs. You know, we got to have them. They are important. I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm. But the more of them you have, the less effective they are.
Absolutely.
Because you can't remember them all. So when you get to a point where your AP and your SOG books are as thick as a big city old school telephone book, then they're completely ineffective because nobody can remember that much information. Nobody's going to read that information, even when you assign it to them. So write your APs and SOGs with that in mind. So be, you know, it needs to be important. Are we doing the same thing, though, with emails? And I mean, we do a lot of our training online. Trust me, I being in charge of training for our organization, that is a very efficient way for us to send training out. But is it effective? So is our communications have become very efficient. Emails and the screens in the stations, like you're talking about, were very efficient. Are we effective?
They aren't the same thing.
they both have E's, two F's.
Well, things, you know, that's a good question because things change. I mean, it changes quickly nowadays, mm-hmm. a lot quicker than when we were young firefighters. I have younger kids. You guys have younger kids. You watch them operate the cell phone and the apps they're using. And I'm gonna sound old, but Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm sure there's other ones I'm unaware of that they use. And they're always seeking information. But maybe we're in the area where we're old school, so we email. Well, maybe emails aren't what they're seeking. You know, I don't know. Maybe we need to. It's going to sound weird. Maybe we need to put important stuff on our Twitter page that becomes public a little bit sometimes, or you can do private, obviously. But they're just, I see my son and my daughter, and they're in their 20s, and they're just pounding through those apps. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're grabbing their information, including news, weather, everything is coming from those apps.
Yeah.
And they're not, my daughter's a nurse at one of the hospitals here in town. She's not checking her email 17 times a day like I do. She don't care. She'll check it every couple of days, you know.
Yeah.
But she definitely is checking her Instagram stuff, or she's checking her Twitter feeds, seeing that. So maybe that's something that we need to look at. And I think that Craig brings up a good point of how we communicate with the next generation that's coming up.
And I do think that's one thing we have been very good about, that we have those conversations in our staff meetings. How should we be communicating? How can we be effective? I mean, we do care. We want to communicate. We want to do what's best for everybody. But you're always bouncing up against I look at it with my emails. I get more emails than I ever used to. Every year it increases.
Yeah.
So where is the point where all you do is delete crappy emails all day just to get your real ones?
At least 1 hour.
You don't get any work done.
Yeah. 1 hour's worth of work.
But, and that's where I do like what we, one of our solutions is we're going to give it in a few different ways. Yes, we're going to give it by email. We're going to send the email out, a memo out by email, important information. But then we also have our morning meetings. So right. We're actually doing it. Yes, it's virtual, but it's face-to-face virtual. So people can ask questions if they don't understand it. So we're trying to do it in different ways. And I do think that is effective.
I think so, too. But that, like say, once again, there's a possibility of failure there. As a battalion chief, shift battalion chief, I set up the morning meeting. I communicate with the station captains. So all I can do is communicate with the station captains. I don't know what goes on after that. I tell them to print off the morning meeting, put it at the kitchen table.
They hit mute as soon as you start talking.
right. If they're even there. If they're there, we do it at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they're always shocked that we do it. Oh, I didn't know we were starting a meeting at 8 o'clock. We've been doing it for 7 years, guys. It's always a shock. You know, those communication issues. So does it when it comes from my mouth through the computer screen to the captain? Unless it's important, I don't really ask for feedback. You know, and then does that get transferred down to the newest guy on the department? I would hope so. We talk about that often, but I'm not quite sure.
We did our first web-based dual station meeting. I'm thinking it was 6 years ago, so maybe it was closer to eight. But honest to God, I swear, the crew that was out there, I don't know how they accomplished this. They never gave me the details. But with somebody's cell phone, they took a picture of them sitting at the dining room table on the cell phone, and they had it pre-positioned. And so they must have already planned through this, done some fake meetings, I don't know, but they got their cell phone placed just right up there in front of the camera. How they even kept the screen on so long, I don't know. But when we logged in for the meeting, there they were, and it was classic TV, frustrated, and I hear the guys laughing, but I can't see their mouths moving on this whole thing. And it delayed web meetings at our department by at least 2 years.
Right.
Because of how well that first experience was.
Yeah, you could have the best laid plans.
Best dang pranks that I ever actually had pulled on me, because I was absolutely clueless when it happened. It was done so well. In focus, it didn't look like a cell phone picture. Crazy.
Once in all, I'll just randomly ask for feedback of a certain station. You're just double checking.
Mm-hmm.
And want the feedback, obviously, but I'll throw it out there once in a while. We do in our morning meeting, I'll run through. I'm not a big guy on telling them what they're doing for the day. You know, obviously there's some calendar events that have to go on that they have to be at, but I'll ask them what they're doing. So I usually get pretty good participation at the end when you're asking them what their plans are for the day. And I don't, you know, they have calendar events to be at, and then after that I'm big on letting them decide what they're going to do. We pay captains a considerable amount of money to make decisions. If it's inspecting or hydro flushing or training or taking it easy, it's up to them.
Yeah, they know what they need to get done. They know their objectives. Yeah. If you're behind, you maybe want to get out and get busy. If you're ahead, well, maybe you can take it a little easier.
But communication is a big, big subject in the fire service, big subject in your life, big subject in your family, communications. I have a younger daughter, a daughter getting married at the end of the month, and communication is terrible. A lot of stuff coming at person, a lot of stuff not coming at persons, a lot of stuff going through that. So I'm learning a lot about communication at an advanced age now, about what needs to be done. So,
I'm finding it surprising the amount of time I am spending now on communicating or even just listening to other folks as the interim chief in our department where I'm at now. I've been doing that for about 3 months or so.
Sure.
And I'm spending so much more time on interpersonal relationships, listening, communicating, than I expected to. I expected to be spending a lot more time in organizing, planning, and directing. And, yeah, that's caught me a little bit off guard. And I was sharing that with former mayor of our town who runs an electrical business, and when I shared that with him, that I really was not surprised. I was caught off guard with how much time I would spend with people on issues that are important. Would you quit bugging me so I could do work? It's time that I feel needs to be spent in the areas where I'm spending it. And this individual said, okay, well, Now I know you're really getting into what the job is about. Because that's, you know, that's not in the textbooks, and even if it is, it doesn't do it justice to what's going on. That the biggest part of management at that level is managing human relations and expectations. And I can also see why, not to say this in a negative way, that you also want to be careful how big a sphere of influence that you have, how productive you are going to be if you're also trying to manage any programs or systems. And one of my expectations I set for everybody when I started was that I expect each of our supervisors to manage between 3 and 7 people, 3 and 7 things.
Sure.
And depending on what level of the organization you are, you might be managing more people and less things, or you might be managing more things and less people. And it doesn't mean you can manage 14 things, like between 6 and 14. That doesn't mean you're going to manage it well. And I'm looking around the room, and I'm getting the confirmation eyes that, yeah, I think I'm on 23 things that I'm trying to manage right now.
I was actually thinking, yeah.
Did you call my chief?
We use, or I use, a different system. It's called, if you do a good job with something, you get another
job. You get another job.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about the next one that's going to come before
but
this.
But that's a nature of the beast, kind of.
Right.
Right. And so I can also see there's a finite capacity for how much you can realistically manage. And I've known that before, obviously. You have to put a lot more effort into managing that. You can't necessarily communicate to our department's relatively small, 2 stations and 33 operations personnel. But think of the idea of, I want to be able to have interactions with all 33 of them and do other things. Right. It's very difficult to do that when you're not utilizing a chain of command to try to get a lot of those messages out in a common way.
It's one of the most difficult things we're dealing with nowadays. Everybody's busy. Everybody out there, every department is busy, and they're getting busier. And it doesn't matter if you're big or small, because you somewhat proportionately have the staffing, you know, whether you're bigger or smaller. So you're all busy. It doesn't matter if you're big or you're small. You're right. Busy, because if you're small, you have less people to do all the work. If you're big, yeah, you have more people to do the work, but there's more work. And and so it's this when we're talking about communication here, one of the things that I know I've struggled with, I still struggle with, is you get so darn busy that you forget to communicate stuff because you're just trying to keep up. And so sometimes it's not intentional that I didn't communicate something. It's I was so busy I forgot. And then you also, when you actually do get time to stop and think, it's, well, do I send this out, or is this going to just be a waste of everybody's time? Right. And so that, to be honest, is one of the things I think I've struggled with in officer positions the most is being busy and then trying to make sure that information gets out. It's when I'm sending information out, I feel good. Yep, it's getting out there. I'm getting it out. But there's times when I blink and a couple days went by and, oh, I probably should have sent that out, and I didn't. And, right. and it wasn't intentional. It was that, I think, is one of the hardest things that a lot of officers are going to struggle with.
So yeah, I really look. You brought up a good point about the size of departments and stuff. But you know, you look at a small volunteer fire department around here with 23 people that are volunteering their time. How do you communicate with that group? You look at you know, Morehead Fire, Jeff. You're involved with this couple stations. How do you communicate with that group? Fargo Fire is a little bigger. How do you communicate with that group? Seattle, Washington. Could you imagine trying to deal with FDNY? I mean, how do you get that down to from the top all the way down to the lowest level?
Years ago, again, I don't whether you're a Brunicini fan or not, I do think he did a lot of great things, but I was in a presentation with him one time, and somebody asked him that question. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the best size department? He said, actually, he thought moderate, because they have enough resources, enough administration, enough people to do stuff, that they can get some things done. But he said that they're not too big that you can't get anything done, because for us to change something we do when we're talking about procedures, process, tactics, SOGs, we can get all our crews out to the training ground. Granted, it'll take us a few weeks.
Right.
Brunicini's point was, in Phoenix, it takes them, it was like a year or more.
Sure.
Like he was talking about, as a chief, to meet with every station, every crew. That's all you do. That's all you do for months. And months and months and months to try and meet with every crew. And so, yeah, that's daunting.
It would be tricky. You know, obviously you're relying on the different levels in the department, you know, down to your assistant chiefs, battalion chiefs, captains, you know, down, you know, to pass on that information as quickly as possible. There are some things out there that have to be passed down quickly. And there are things that maybe don't. Can be handled through the training, maybe handled through a year or so of change. But, I mean, could you imagine the size of, like you say, with Bruce Cini talking about taking a year or so to talk to everybody? That's crazy to make change.
Yeah.
So you have an average career of 25, 30 years, so you made 25 changes. I mean, it's like sometimes we have 25 changes in a week, you know, on smaller departments sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with our communications, but I'm communicating with people of the same age. I really am. I mean, I'm very comfortable with the communications that come through our organization. I hope it goes past me, through me, and past me. To the bottom, or not bottom, but lower level or newer firefighters. But I'm not sure if it always does sometimes. And I spend a lot of time, I drive around the stations once in a while, meet with the guys, and kind of the same questions pop up. So then when the same questions pop up, you know the communication hasn't been very clear on it.
Yeah.
Or they didn't like the communication. That's the other thing.
I think we make a very proactive effort at it, and we're open to... If we're not doing it right or you want it a different way, let us know. We'll talk about it. We'll look at it. We'll try and do it. We want to do what works for everybody, what's best. But it also goes beyond, you know, I'm thinking day-to-day communications. One of the other forms that we have is we do the union management meetings. And when our chief now, he's not new anymore, but he started that when he came in, is meeting with the union. And that really is a good way to make sure that, and we're in a right-to-work state, so our union doesn't hold quite the power that they do in a lot of other states, but it's that respect of the union and the workforce and that we want to listen to what are your issues, what's going on, and then that it gives us a chance also to let them know what's coming up. And we just met this week and had a very good meeting where, again, they bring up their concerns, issues, what they're hearing, but then it gives us a chance to go, here's what we're looking at, here's what's coming down the pipeline from my perspective, working in training and all of that. Okay, we've got a new application period opening soon, so we're recruiting new firefighters, so please encourage everybody, remind everybody to get the word out, to get firefighters to apply. And we're also going to be starting a new class of recruits, so just so you guys know, that we'll probably be bringing crews in periodically to train with the crews. It provides another avenue for those communications.
Do you take minutes of those kinds of meetings so that you can post them for the people who haven't been there in an effort to try to kind of increase the communications?
Yeah.
Okay. We've been trying something that I'm also on a board of a local church that I'm on, and we have a lady who works with nonprofits who introduced us to this idea of recording the minutes for the group while the meeting is going on. Maybe there's a fancy title to whatever this whole thing is. I don't know. But we'll have the agenda up there. And when we're going through, we'll have the agenda up on the screen, but instead of it just sitting there static, when we come to a decision on something in that agenda item, we'll actually type up there whatever our short narrative is that we want to be in the minutes. While the meeting is going on, somebody there is recording the minutes, and it gives us the chance to look at it right there before we move on to the next topic. And it's a little weird because we had to get used to the idea of pausing for a minute at the end, and she would sometimes be typing some of the minutes up as we're going. And I can tell you, if you're the one leading the meeting, you shouldn't be the one trying to record these minutes, because I've been trying to do it at work.
Really? Because that's what I do.
Well, you're a better man than I am.
No, it's horribly ineffective.
Yes.
The support is not
services
work well.
Needs more support services.
Yeah. Yes.
So if somebody else, even if it's one of the captains at one of the other stations, is actually doing the scribing, you're talking, but they get to share the screen of the agenda and do the typing anyways. Once we got used to, at church, this idea of doing that as we were going and taking the occasional pauses, actually sometimes it gave you a moment to just reflect back on what you had just kind of come to a conclusion
about. Point of it was, yeah.
And if there were any action items, they would write the action item and the name and a deadline of
Jeff is going to do this by such and such a date. So 30 days later, when we come back, we could see, did I do it or did I not? And this would serve as our old business line item. We would go through the past things, right, and they would actually go through the agenda and see if there weren't any action items on this thing, they'd wipe it off and be done. But if there were still items there, we could leave it. But then predictably, if it's a monthly meeting, then 3 weeks after the meeting was done, I could go back to the minutes and print it off and say, now, what did I agree I was going to do before the next meeting? Right. That's next week. Right. And I better do something. And I have done that at work.
Oh, yeah.
With these.
Yeah. That's it. But at work, that's what I look at. And that's when I was talking about forgetting to communicate and missing things. Being an AC of support services, one of the I do enjoy it. But one of the parts of my job is I'm on just about every damn committee the department has. And they're important. They play very important roles. And being an accredited agency also means that, yes, you need an agenda for every meeting, and yes, you need minutes for every meeting. Which, again, is very, I can't argue against it. But what I end up finding is I end up doing the minutes, because a lot of times it's people coming in off duty, whatever, and then you saddle that on them, and then you're waiting to get minutes. It's easier if I do the minutes. But then what happens is it takes me, because every quarter I've got a whole bunch of different meetings and committees, and now all of a sudden I have a few days worth of minutes to write.
You got
to
get rid of
I got to get rid of that quicker. But then by the time I get the minutes finished and written for every one of them, it's old news in some cases, right. And so then I would look stupid if I send it out. So in some cases I don't send it out. Some cases I forget, and it's again, it's all important. It's all good stuff.
I've had the same thoughts about the minutes and should they go out or should they not? Because we had an officers' meeting that occurred about 2 weeks ago, and I wanted to have minutes done by the end of the meeting so they'd be posted. But we had a couple areas that were a little more complex that I need to take a little more time to write up this area, and I don't want to stop our momentum because we're not going to get through half the agenda items I thought we were going to get through today. And I would get frustrated and say, all right, I'll finish this one up later. Let's move on to the next thing. Yeah. And then the next thing you know, it's 2 weeks later, and it's like there's only like two agenda items that I got to go back and retweet the thing just so that it's saying what we said to say. But still, there's always this flood of things going on where it's never risen up to the level of being the thing that I want to do, even though I've had the same same officer asked twice, hey, do you have the minutes done for that meeting yet? Yeah, because
the minutes is one of those items that floats to not to the bottom of your priority list, but it's always floating down from the top items because every day new top items come in, and so then they get pushed. And it's interesting to hear you say that.
It's like kind of nice in our chief officers meetings in Fargo. We have our office manager. She is absolutely fantastic on how to take one subject that you have 10 people in the room.
That's the best
arguing about it.
Case scenario.
And she is able to grab the important information and a solution at the end. When I walk out of that meeting not even sure what the heck we just talked about. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the big thing. And then, like, say, having someone that can come in, maybe be an outside.
That's best case scenario that you can do that. Problem, again, is it's tough to do it and have people. We have a drone or a UAS team that's with two different cities, police and fire, and the county sheriff. And so you've got five agencies, and it's kind of written in our bylaws that the agency that whoever is the head of the board has to then provide the minute taker.
Sure.
Yep. And so it's kind of one of those, like, sorry, I'm head of the board for the next 2 years, so Andy had to do that the first 2 years with us, and now it's the sheriff's office. So the sheriff's office person has to come in and do it, and it's one of those where I'd love to have somebody come in and take minutes, and I think that's where we need to go. And we have some great guys that have actually offered to do minutes in some of the committees, and they are doing them, but we can't pull like one of our office managers out or our office associates even on every committee because there's so many committees.
Yeah.
But maybe on some of the more important ones, that's what we should do.
Yeah, and how much does information of those committee meetings need to get out? Obviously, something that affects the large group, like a clothing committee, that should go out to everybody. The hazmat team, maybe it just goes out to the hazmat people.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to go out to everybody, unless there's something important in there that has changed how we operate or something.
But if you're thinking about the hazmat team, how much more effective would it be if the person who's taking minutes is the same person who's been doing it for the last six meetings and knows what's going on, knows the flow, and knows how you want things written up sort of in the minutes. Not you personally, but you, the team, the work group. They get the vernacular. They get what your intentions are behind it. And there's also a lot of maybe efficiency, maybe effectiveness that both come in from having a consistent voice there. And that church group I talked about, that person who's also a specialist in working with nonprofits is so great. She's even at times able to say when we've been going through something, all right, so I've heard a lot of conversation, and what it all seems to be saying is this, and correct me if I'm wrong. And she starts typing what she's saying, and it's like, well, yeah, that's like exactly it. How did you know how to write that? Right. Or it seems to me that all we really need to do is ask one more question to really get this answered, but I don't hear it being asked, and it's this. And then she'll ask the question. I'm thinking, it is so great that you're writing up
you gotta get rid of her.
Why aren't you just leading this group in the first place?
Right.
You seem to be way smarter than I am.
Who's running the show here?
But a good minutes person like that, just like a good assistant in the command rig,
right,
can really make that thing run so much more smoothly. It's not just the amount of having two people in there. You get the synergy that goes back and forth of them pre-anticipating what you want to do, knowing where you want to go with things, and at times being able to break gridlocks, even though that's not really their point or their intention, that they can be that little bit of that outsider to say, hey, hold on a second. I think I heard somebody just say what we were talking about a couple sentences ago. Is that what we need? And I didn't even really need to get off into this path on the communications.
You brought up a good point there, though, and I think that's another show is talking about, you know, fire ground communications, but we've been just talking about administration communications.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even
We've not even think touched of. Base on fire ground, and I don't want to tonight.
No.
I think that's a whole other topic, but all great points.
I had a little bit of a secondary thought when I was thinking of this topic for tonight, and perhaps it's coming from a selfish place too, but our organization is going through some changes right now and some opportunities to rethink how we do some things and restructure how we might be organizing, which is fancy speak for we hire a consultant to come in and kind of take a look at what's going on and give some recommendations. And it can be both a good and a bad thing, but one of the things that came out of somebody from the outside coming in and talking to our folks and trying to hear what some of our issues were, and then making some recommendations was that person gave us the advice when we are working through resolutions or options for changing or addressing problems, is don't forget to celebrate your wins when you're going through this. Because quite often organizations won't when they do this, and you'll make incredible progress in a lot of areas, but you still have a lot of work left to do. And people will become frustrated because they feel like nothing's happening because they're always seeing a set of problems in front of them that you're trying to address. Because you go from the most important things down to the least important, or you grab low-hanging fruit first, but you also don't journal and log, hey, let's keep in mind where we were at and where we've gotten to. And I've seen this with past chiefs in our department as well, too, where you set some initiatives in place and you move forward and things are going great, and then a few years down the road, you know, there's a little dissatisfaction about other problems, and you forget, yeah, but we've like instituted 30 things that are awesome that we weren't doing before. We've got all of these pieces of equipment. We've done this, that, and the other thing. Did you forget about all that stuff? Everything sucks now compared to, I mean, if you look back 10 years, haven't we come a long way? And it's real easy to forget the progress that you've made or where you're going if you don't maybe have those things journalized and recorded in a geeky kind of way to be able to fall back on, but that you're not also communicating periodically those wins that are going on and reinforcing the wins that you've got. I don't usually think to do that. I think to thank people at the time when they've done something, but do I go back and repeat, hey, just to recap, look at all the great things we've done this year.
I think that's one of the most important things our officers all should be doing, and now that I think about it, we should put that in that newly promoted officer class, is to teach the history of the organization. Mm-hmm. And we do that to the whole department every year, but to the point where, it's a stupid example, but when I remember as a firefighter, we'd get snowstorms and blizzards, which was every day in the winter, we hand shoveled all the driveways, all the roadways around the station, the sidewalks, the driveway, we hand shoveled it all. And then eventually we got snow blowers, the walk behind for a lot of them, and so then we did that. And now, in a lot of cases, most of our stations have an actually enclosed cab vehicle to remove snow with. Blowers, whether it's a skid steer or a tool cat or a plow truck. And so the equipment has gotten so much better, and I think that's where it's important that we always keep track of that and remind guys that, you know, look where we used to be and look where we're at now. And so I think that's a very important piece of that. Like you said, we get busy, and then I don't have time to celebrate. Got to move on to the next issue, the next problem. But to stop and go, God, remember how this used to be? Remember the gear we used to have? Remember the trucks? We've had a couple chiefs here, and our last chief really did a great job of starting, getting us into better gear that really was important. That's life safety stuff. But also better trucks, better equipment to go to the city and fight for that money to get the stuff that we needed instead of, oh, I'm going to give back money to the city and then the chief looks good. He did what was right for us as a fire department, and then that's also what's best for the citizens. Then we can provide a better level of protection, and our current chief has continued that on. But it's teaching those guys that haven't been here for that many years that it wasn't always the way it is now. We've come a long ways, and I'm biased to say that, well, we've come a long ways in the right direction, the good direction, but it was not always this good, it was not always this pretty, so appreciate what you have. It teaches the appreciation, I think.
Yeah, and you can't fault newer people in the organization for coming in and their baseline being what they know today when they've started.
Because they don't know any different.
Right. I wish we had, when you brought up the snow shoveling thing, I wish we had pictures of when I started in 94, because we also had no power snow removal equipment whatsoever. All we had were shovels, and not grain-type shovels. These are snow-type shovels.
Spring steel shovels? Would you all line up?
We would. Yep. So we had four people, and we would line up shovel to shovel to shovel. Yep. And then
make sure you got it angled, because when you hit that relief crack in the concrete, yes, if you're straight on, boom, it's going to go right into your gut.
Yep. And if you were trying to get a little low to get some, to get a little bit of oof on that, you weren't going to hit it in the gut. It was going to hit you right in the groin.
Yep.
The old guys would love it if they could see a young guy who was struggling or whatever, and they saw that he was getting the handle too low, and they're just waiting for the time when they'd hit that crack. And then you experiment a little bit with trying to maybe try to curve them into a little bit of a V, or trying to get everything at angles, or try to stack, yep, guys maybe six inches apart, yep, from each other, like the plow trucks would do in rows. But the idea of clearing a double deep, three bay wide apron in front of the station with just human beings and snow shovels, which meant that during a snowstorm, you couldn't sleep all the way through a heavy falling snowstorm.
Right, you had to get...
You had to be out there. So if you weren't out there when you had about 4 inches of snow or less, it was going to be a problem. Because 4 inches of snow or less, it's still easy pushing. two is better, but four is okay. If you got up to six, now it's starting to get a problem because you're not going to get very far before it's rolling over.
So how do you celebrate those things, though? So
yeah.
To me,
yeah,
those, you know, we celebrate accreditation. We celebrate ISO ratings. We celebrate promotions. We celebrate those kind of things. But how do you celebrate advancement at the lower level? You know what I mean? It's,
yeah. How do you celebrate beautiful New York hooks on your trucks?
That's a great question.
You had one short pipe pole and one long one on the truck, and right, hopefully you didn't need any more than that, because that's all you had.
Right. So yeah. So when you talked about you had an outside come and look in your department and talk about how do you celebrate accomplishments? What does that look like?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I know how you are, Jeff. You're out thanking people. You're out telling them thanks for the work and working hard. I appreciate it. But how do you celebrate that?
Right. Well, you know, without having thought about it ahead of time, when I was going through my first professional credentialing through CIPC as a chief fire officer, one of the exercises you had to do if you didn't have all the right amount of time of experience and education, all the things there, is you had to go through a self-assessment along like 18 different performance dimensions and be able to write, what did I do in this area? In managing budgets would be like a really sexy and attractive one, so I'm glad I picked that. But
we just lost everybody.
Yeah, good night.
But it would
he
force,
said budget.
Yep. It would force you in all these things. So let's say in training delivery. So it would have to force you to say, well, what have I done up to this point? And I had to go through in each one of these and create like a journal on Word about, okay, what have I done since I started on Morehead Fire, or maybe in the fire service in general, to build myself up along in this area. And by the time I was done, I put a lot of time and effort into it, and I was finding results that were surprising me. I had forgotten of things that I had done 4 or 5 years earlier that were actually really big things, things that we had accomplished as a department, things that I had accomplished as a supervisor. I completely forgotten I had done, because you're just so overwhelmed with all the work that you do that you don't recognize those benchmarks and milestones. And now it's funny, as I ran across that piece of paper on cleaning out the office at home the other day, which conveniently ran up until 2011, which is when I got the first CIPC credentialing. So I got this beautiful log from like 94 to 11 of the things that I've done with the fire department. I don't know what the frick I've done since then, because I haven't sat down and taken the time to go, what has happened from year to year? You know, even if you go back and look at annual reports and try to figure out what things did we have to do to make some of these things happen, that's the kind of thing you almost have to have, like your fire department journal of things that are happened, or sure, a picture book or timeline with highlights like a fancy company would do, to show from year to year what accomplishments you've made. And another subject for a different show is, of course, incredibly sexy, annual reports for your fire department. And you're going to come back for that show, right?
I am unavailable for that show.
Okay, dang it. But, you know, there's lots of different purposes that annual reports serve. Sometimes you just want to be able to illustrate a story and an image for your fire department. Sometimes you want it to communicate performance data. Sometimes you want to record the history of what's happened in your department that year. And sometimes it's all not appropriate for an annual report. So like all the things that you might think are important milestones, A lot of people outside the department may not care about it. B, maybe you don't want to communicate those things because people wouldn't know the context or understand why this is even a thing. But yet if we had our own portion of an annual report to record, you know we want to know who got hired, who retired, who was promoted, but wouldn't you like to know, when did we actually switch over to the New York hooks? Because those things are sweet, and the old fiberglass pike poles, I guess they got a purpose, but yeah, I don't remember when we did that, and that was probably a big deal because those things were expensive.
It's kind of got me thinking, because with accreditation, there's an annual compliance report that you have to do, and it has a section on there that kind of covers the bigger changes. But I'm wondering if there's a way we could take that and then some of the annual report stuff, and then it almost becomes where it's a presentation of the fire department itself, because the chief has to do an annual report to the commission and the mayor, city administration.
Yeah,
and maybe that's something where we could take some of that and just do an annual report to the department where we cover, this is what we've done this year. Like, we just took delivery of our brand new ladder truck. Well, yeah, that's a big deal. That's important. That's the kind of stuff that goes in the annual compliance report, but I don't send anything out to the department on it, and most of the people here, because they're going to see it at some point, and it travels word of mouth. Right. But
maybe that's a good way of doing it, because like I say, the chief has to do an annual report to the city commission, but that can sometimes be driven politically. It can be driven budget wise,
exactly,
other things like that. It doesn't feed the stuff that the city commission doesn't care about.
Yeah,
but we could.
But
take
we do
that
as fire department. They care about.
We could take that and feed it, and then and then that would be a way to recognize people that played important roles in making sure these things happen.
Sure.
Because we have all these people on the department that are doing all these things, putting a lot of extra work into it and effort to make sure that we get a new truck, we get this, we do that. That would be an opportunity at that time to then thank them and go, this is who worked on this, they spent many hours, this is what they did.
And wouldn't it be fun to pull out the 2006 report or the 2006 PowerPoint presentation or a series of JPEGs that you saved it as or whatever, like your scrapbook to say, what all did we do? And maybe it's 50 different slides.
It'd be littered with all things Jeff did back then.
Well, let me tell you what.
Well, it hasn't done anything for
my gosh, that guy was a rock star back then. What happened to him?
What happened to him? Yeah.
Oh. And he was so much thinner at the time. He looked healthy. Look at the color in his skin. My goodness. It was like he saw the sun.
I didn't know if that was Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jeff Wallen.
Oh, no, that's definitely Jeff Wallen. Look at that stupid little cheesy mustache he had on there. He can't grow a hair on his lip for anything.
Oh, I think that might be a way to do things. I'm not sure what other departments do to get the message
out. I don't
think
this is common on like this, of documenting the historical things that are important to you but not to others.
Right.
And I suppose we all suffer from the same things, even in our own families and stuff. How many more pictures should I have taken of the kids?
Yeah.
Or written down the things that were cool that we did not.
We were just going through pictures for my upcoming daughter's wedding.
Ah.
We have a ton of pictures of my daughter as young. She's the oldest. And now we start going through, and I have a son that's younger, and most of his pictures have my daughter in it. Never by himself, you know, and a lot less pictures of him. So that kind of tells me that people should, you know, document occasions over time.
No, I think it's important overall in that we are trying as an organization to get better at it. Firefighters don't typically like commendations and awards, and so we struggle with it. And that's, again, a whole nother show, but we're trying to get better at it. We're trying to recognize promotions and retirements and do those things. But I kind of think it might be a good job to, or a good idea to log the stuff. And so I'll visit with the chief about this. I think that'd be a great topic at our staff meeting, that maybe we try and take some of the annual compliance report, some of the annual report, and then some of our other information.
Internal information.
Yeah, internal information, and pile it into a once-a-year deal where we can get the shifts together. And
even if it's a recorded message or for the chief or
you know,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
It recognizes, like I say, it recognizes people that do work. It recognizes the accomplishments the department's made, the advancements.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The advancements of public safety in the city. You know, those kind of things really make a big difference.
And it can give a lot of other people in the department the opportunity to contribute to that. So that doesn't have to be a report that just assistant chief.
Oh, no, it sounds perfect for just the chief. Yeah. And an extra job.
Yeah. And if only the chief should work on
maybe
that.
Maybe those assistant chiefs. Maybe. I wouldn't go any lower than that.
No.
You don't want. Yeah. We got other issues, though.
No, yeah. We want consistency. If we need consistency, we got to keep it up high. Yeah. You know what I'd like to communicate is I think us reaching a point where we could wrap this particular episode up.
Yes.
And think about the future. Take some time to plan.
I think that sounds great.
Communicate. Plan.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Strategize.
Got all kinds of buzzwords we can throw out there. But
use a little strategery. Come up with the next show.
Hopefully we've discussed something that you can relate to this evening, and gives you something to think about where you're driving down the road listening to the podcast.
You know, it was nice to talk about something that didn't involve current events that we've all heard too much about that we will not speak of during this episode at all. So
appreciate that.
We hope you enjoyed us communicating with you, and look forward to you joining us for a future edition of Tailboard Talk here on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. So have a good day.
Good day. Be safe.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Yeah, something's recording there. And there's going to be music coming in.
Oh, and this is beautiful. Crickets in the background, yeah. So we got the ambiance going.
People yeah. are going to think we're just sitting out in a field.
Right.
I'll tell you what. Not far from the truth.
Fargo Moorhead.
Tell you what.